Hello and welcome to Juno Afternoon. It is Wednesday, October 12th, 2022. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and on today's show, Chin Chin, KTOO's newest reporting fellow, will share her experiences traveling in Iran as a teenager and what it taught her about the global struggle for gender equality. Blue Nagoon will tell us about their new album featuring Juno vocalist. We'll hear about the Juno Symphony's 60th anniversary gala, and the Juno Audubon Society will be here to talk about their upcoming presentation for October. Those conversations, sounds wild, music, and more coming up right here on Juno Afternoon. Weather for today, Sihudak Wusitan. It's raining. Rain tonight, lows around 49 degrees. Rain tomorrow, high near 53. KTOO Public Media would like to acknowledge the Trinity of the Ak Kwan. We are on their ancestral homeland. Our broadcast studios are built on fill that was once tideland and part of what is called the Indian Village. We recognize those families who regarded the tidelands as a source of food and part of their home, who maintained smokehouses on the tidelands, who parked their boats in the harbor and gathered driftwood for fuel. The families of the Juno Indian Village, like their ancestors, cherish and depend upon their immediate connection to the waterfront. KTOO is working to lift up Thlinkit voices through the sharing of stories like these and the broadcast of the Thlinkit language. Please excuse us for our mistakes and gunashchish for your patience as we learn. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Blue Nagoon is a Juno-based artist with a new album out titled Here Be Dragons. Welcome to the show, Michael Moss. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how's it going?
It's good, thanks. How are you today?
Good.
Well, would you tell me a little about the music of Blue Nagoon?
Yes, well, Blue Nagoon is just my catch-all name for all of my music projects. So from project to project, it varies. This one is an 11-track album of synth pop and 80s rock with modern pop sensibilities also. With vocals.
And you worked with a number of local singers on the vocal tracks, very intentional on your part. So how did you like the way that turned out?
Oh, it was great. You know, when I got back into songwriting a couple of years ago, previously I'd always sang my own songs and I kind of got bored of that. And my voice doesn't do everything well. And so it was really fun to start reaching out to friends who sing and be like, hey, could you be on my track? And it just kind of snowballed into this album. And so there's six folks from Juno, myself, and then Salisa Thole, Alyssa Fisher, Christina Pollack, Patricia Latim, and Heather Mitchell. And then I also collaborated with a few singers from faraway places that I met in online production communities. But it's so much fun to hear my songs being interpreted by actual good singers.
Yeah, well, those are great singers. I know about half the names that you just rattled off there. So we're going to listen to a little bit of the music in just a bit. But I wanted to get the backstory on the album, Here Be Dragons. I'm curious about the title. I also know this was sort of a pandemic project for you. And now that it's finished, how are you feeling?
Well, it's great. You know, it's funny because now the album's out and I'm supposed to be promoting it, but really all I want to do is just go back to writing more songs for the next ones. That's the best part for me. It started as a pandemic project, but I don't think it's going to end with the end of the pandemic. I think it's just going to keep going. Now that the floodgates are open, I just continue to write. And having these awesome singers, you know, that are interested in singing is very inspiring. So I keep wanting to write songs for them. The title Here Be Dragons comes from a line from the song we're going to hear in a minute called Hinterlands, but it's just, you know, in the olden days they would write that on the edge of the map when they didn't know where, or they didn't know what was out there, you know. So it's just kind of an ode to the unknown and the wilderness and faraway places.
Is that a theme of the album?
Yeah, kind of. There's a lot of fantasy and like sci-fi influences on here. You know, part of the pandemic was escapism, you know, like it was more fun to read fantasy and watch Star Trek than it was to experience the real world sometimes. And so that's a theme that comes across a lot in a lot of these songs. And it just, you know, it's something I like anyway. It is an emergent theme. It wasn't like intentional, but it definitely is in there.
And what are some of the other themes of the album?
I think besides just, you know, coping with the modern world and how to survive in it is also just the breaking of cycles, which is part of that. I mean, it kind of all plays into that. But I think that my generation and myself and my friends, you know, we all sort of have experienced it to some extent where we're breaking either generational cycles, like deciding like, okay, what our parents did is not what we want to do, or just cycles in our own life that we've, you know, bad habits that we've picked up kind of thing. So I think the cycle breaking is a definite emergent theme.
Got it. You recorded most of this at home. Is that a new thing for you or something that you adapted to during the pandemic because you kind of had to?
No, it's kind of, I've always kind of done it that way. But what's changed is that in the past, you know, decade or so, the technology available to people recording music at home is just, you know, it's amazing what you can accomplish. You can get studio quality stuff at home. I'm not saying mine is 100% studio quality, but it's like what you're capable of. And also the way that you can collaborate with people from far away and make music with people, you know, on the other side of the planet. So yeah, it was always at home, but now it feels like home is a lot more well-equipped and open to the world.
Well, that is great for the future projects that you're you're excited to get going. But let's listen to a little bit of the album, Here Be Dragons. This track is Hinterlands, and the vocalist is Salisa Thole. Is there anything you want to say before, like to set up the song before I play it?
This is just a kind of a thesis statement for the album. You know, I mean, the album takes a lot of inspiration from like late 80s, early 90s pop music where they had like synthesizers and drum machines, but then also hair metal guitars and acoustic drums mixed in. You know, it's kind of a mashed together. And I really like those sounds mashed together. And so this song is kind of that to a T.
All right, let's hear it now. This is Hinterlands off Here Be Dragons. Very nice. That sounds great.
Thank you.
Definitely recognize Salisa's voice there. We got the title of the album there right before the chorus kicked off. I have to say, this kind of music and you as a musician is very different than what we normally have on the show and like what you'd normally see around playing live around town. What are your plans for this music now that it's out in the world?
Well, I would love to perform it live. It's just, as you say, I'm a little bit of an outliner in the music community. It's, you know, it's all electronic and stuff. But I'd love to perform it live. The problem is just with, you know, with all these singers and all these people involved, it's a little hard to put together. But hopefully something will come in the next few months where we'll be able to at least do a small show featuring some of the songs.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I love the sound of it. I love the 80s vibe. It's all coming back into style now. Was that deliberate on your part, or is that just what you kind of like to listen to yourself?
It's just what I like. Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. Michael Moss, Blue Nagoon, congratulations on this album. It is a really big achievement. So I know last time we talked a couple, maybe a year, maybe 2 years ago, you're just getting started on some of these singles. So where can we find this album or follow you and your music?
You should be able to find it pretty much anywhere that you listen to music. So if you're a streamer, you know, you got Spotify, Apple, Amazon. If you would like to buy it, you can go to Bandcamp or Apple Music, anything like that. But yeah, pretty much anywhere. The artist's name is Blue Nagoon with an N. So it's like Blue Lagoon, but with an N instead of the L. And if you search for that pretty much anywhere, you're going to find it, YouTube, wherever. But if you want to purchase it, Bandcamp is probably the best place.
Do you have videos to go along with some of these songs?
Yeah. So in lieu of the live performances, I've been doing a lot of music videos. So like Alyssa and I shot one over in Treadwell on Sandy Beach. And then I shot another one with a woman that I worked with across the country. Anyway, but yes, YouTube/Blue Nagoon, you'll find all my music videos.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for talking with me today, Michael. We'll go out on one last track from the album. This is Tangent. Would you like to set it up or share anything else before we say goodbye?
No, this is just another new wave synth rock track. It features Patricia Lateem.
All right. Well, thanks for being on Juno Afternoon today.
Thanks so much.
Here Be Dragons is available wherever you stream music. Up next, the Juno Symphony celebrates their 60th anniversary with a roaring 20s themed gala, dinner, drinks, and even a signature beer. We'll find out more when we come back.
Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we ka shuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha ani kak, gunish cheesh.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Here with me now are Charlotte Truitt and Christopher Cook, all here to talk about the Juno Symphony Gala happening this Saturday. Welcome to both of you. Thanks. Sorry, I don't have my mics going on yet. Christopher, let's start with you since your microphone is on. You're the music director of the Juno Symphony, relatively new to town. How did you get connected to this organization?
Well, that's a great question. Well, I've always looked at the place on the map that Juno resides on, and I always thought, wow, that would be a great place to visit someday. And as the years went by, I ended up making the acquaintance of a gentleman named Kyle Wiley Pickett, who was the former music director of Juno, and he and I ended up working in the same city. And when the position here came available, I applied, and one thing led to another, and here I am sitting in your studio today.
And we're glad to have you here. Charlotte, you are, of course, the executive director of the Juno Symphony. What is the occasion for this weekend's gala?
This weekend, we are celebrating 60 years of the Juno Symphony. And you know, there must have been an awful lot happening in Juno in the 1960s, 62, 63, 64, a really vibrant era in our community for the arts. So a lot of different organizations started and are having anniversaries at this time and in the coming year or two ahead. And so we're celebrating 60 years of bringing high-quality music to the community, and it's just a time to celebrate and kind of party together and enjoy the beauty of music and relationships and people.
Can you share a little history of how the symphony formed?
Well, the symphony formed like most things, very organically, with people just getting together to share their passion. And so it was a small group of school teachers and students who joined in. It wasn't always called the Juno Symphony. It was the Juno Sinfonietta, and different variations along the years early on. And probably, about 25, 30 years ago, really became the Juno Symphony. And it has continued to grow and develop since that time.
And Christopher, what do you envision for the future?
Well, I think we're kind of at the beginning of the future right now. The symphony has just grown tremendously in the last, really the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. But just through the pandemic, I mean, like all arts organizations, the Juno Symphony's had to adapt and come up with really imaginative ways of engaging the public. And they did a fantastic job of doing that. Mm-hmm. Last couple of years. So what does the future hold? I think the future, in a way, it holds new things that we've learned from the last few years, but it also holds a return to what we all cherish as normal. I mean, that's kind of a strange word these days, but I think just getting back to hearing great music and coming together will be a future that we can all enjoy.
Yeah, well said, well said. And we're very glad you're here, and hopefully we'll be here for the next 60 years. So you're both here to talk about the gala, the celebration of the 60th anniversary. The theme is Roaring Twenties. Can you tell me a little bit more about that and what will be happening?
Well, we've got an exciting evening prepared. We are thrilled to be having live dance instruction. The foxtrot will be taught for 6 to 6:30.
The foxtrot.
The foxtrot. Huh. Yeah. So Dan and Lorinda Kastner are coming to teach dance, and so we'll get a little half-hour lesson so we can remember how to count to four together with our partner. And then we have a lovely dinner provided by Smokehouse Catering there at Elizabeth Paradovich Hall. And Night in Italy, I think, is the name of the menu. And great dish and dessert, tiramisu and so on. So a lovely dinner, full dinner. And then Taylor Vidic is going to be playing with her Swingin' Gents. We'll be joining her for live music, and so she'll do about an hour and a half or so of music, you know, and dancing is provided. We've got the dance floor is set up. We also have a no-host bar, and Devil's Club Brewing Company has brewed a special Juno Symphony brew, so that will be available. And so just it's a night to have a good time. We're not doing a silent auction or additional things where people are going to come and contribute. We just want to give back and create a great celebration party for our members and for the community.
That's fantastic. So when you said Roaring Twenties was the theme, mm-hmm. you meant 1920s,
the
not
2020s. Exactly. So myself and several other folks are going to be putting on our 20s costumes, and there's a great store in the Valley, Night Moods, that has them available. So if people want to dress up, there is a resource here locally to get your fringe on, and you can get all dressed up with us in the 1920s era clothing. And then there's zoot suits for those that want to wear suits. And yeah, you can dress up, or if you don't want to get dressed up, just come on down and have a great time. You know, it is Juno. You know, if you come with your extra tufts, all are welcome.
The Juniform. Well, it sounds like so much fun. It is also a fundraiser, and mm-hmm. the proceeds benefit some of your outreach programs. Can you tell me a little bit about what those programs do?
Well, we're very active in our local music community for youth, and in, you know, with the educators in town. It will help to support our summer strings camp, which happens up at Eagle Crest. Also, we have a prelude orchestra that runs all during the school year, and that helps students ages, well, third grade through about eighth grade, under the direction of Franz Felkel, who's our education director. It also supports our efforts to put Franz in the classrooms, and so he does a lot of work with the middle schools this year. We've expanded our program. He provides support and assistance to the string teachers at the high schools, both high schools, and now we're branching out into middle schools. So part of our mission, after talking with the educators in town in roundtables and surveying and really getting to know what the needs are, we're trying to make sure the symphony is augmenting what's already available in town for families and kids in music, and then providing things to help what's already going on with the talented educators in town. So a lot of our efforts here in outreach. We get to bring back our outreach performance in January, the Link Up program, where all the fourth and fifth graders come and actually get a chance to play along with the symphony. We're going to decide either they'll be singing along with the orchestra or they're playing recorders. We've got to decide. During the pandemic, we couldn't have this event, of course. So we are back this January, so it'll support our additional efforts to have our outreach performance in January.
My goodness, that is a long list of things that you all are doing at the Juno Symphony. And there is also a season of performances coming up, too.
Yes, we start our season not this weekend, but the following weekend, October 22nd and 23rd. And Christopher and our guest artist will be back here next week to talk about that particular concert and the exciting things on that program. And we have 5 concerts coming up this year and even more activities later on. And I don't know, Christopher, did you want to share anything about
this season? I guess if you're coming back next week.
We're coming back next week.
We can't talk about it now.
That's right. Well, next week we're going to be talking about the concert that's coming up. But this season, you know, we're calling this season our epic celebration season. So we're celebrating 60 years of the Juno Symphony, and we're celebrating it by doing some really extraordinary music and literature, some things that are just very well-known to our listeners, some things that are very well-known pieces that have never been performed here in Juno, and then a couple of new things as well. So it's a season of surprises and just fantastic music and just fantastic guest artists all around.
Yeah, and you've also been helping out with Sundays at the Symphony, it's not too new anymore, a couple of years old, started during the pandemic, but mm-hmm. on KRNN on Sundays at 1 p.m., we have an hour-long show that's produced by the Juno Symphony, and you've been a big part of that. Having fun with it?
Oh, yeah. And it's a privilege to begin to really showcase the arts community here, and especially our local musicians. And, of course, we have a special affection for our classical musicians here in Juno, but there are many, many, many others as well. And we've spent the first couple shows, you know, beginning to highlight some of those other performers here in Juno that make our cultural scene so vibrant. Mm-hmm. And we can't wait to continue. And thank you for your support and making that help happen, Shelley.
Right. Oh, and this Sunday, Franz Felkel will be the featured musician. And he's going to really shine in this concert coming up. And he plays a little excerpt from Scheherazade in his solo there. So this Sunday on KRNN, folks who know Franz will want to listen in for sure.
Okay, that sounds good. Great little teaser there. Well, this is all, it's all been really wonderful to talk to you both today. I did want to ask, where can we find out more about what the symphony is doing and get tickets to the gala or other performances?
All right. All of our information is online, junosymphony.org, and you can get tickets for the season, tickets for the gala, and any other information you want to need. Hopefully it's there for you, but we're happy to talk with you over the phone. You can give us a call, kind of an old school approach. We like talking to people still, too. So reach out to Juno Symphony, and we'll love to talk with folks.
Anything to add, Christopher?
No, it's just, you know, there's really nothing more spectacular than going out, dancing, hearing live music, getting food, hanging out with people. So we'd love to see you at our gala this weekend. It's going to be huge fun.
I have a feeling that tickets are probably going to sell out fast, so get them now while you can.
Right. Yes.
Thank you both for being here today. Have the best time this weekend, and we'll see you here back soon to talk about the upcoming symphony concerts.
Sounds great.
I remember the days of just keeping time.
Coming up, we'll hear from our new reporting fellow, Chin Chin, and find out more about her experiences as a teenager in Iran.
Back roads empty for miles. Well, you can't have a dream and cut it to fit. But when I saw you, I knew we'd go together like a wink and a smile.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Joining me now is KTOO's newest reporting fellow, Chin Chin. Hello and welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here today. Would you please introduce yourself?
Sure, I'm Chin Chin. I just finished a master's program in China, in Beijing, and I'm in Juneau for a few months reporting on local issues, and I'm 23 years old.
How did you come to be in this role at KTOO?
Yeah, so earlier in the year, I was looking for local journalism opportunities, and I had a friend from Alaska. She's not from here, but she was working as a journalist here, and I asked her about possible opportunities, so she put me in touch, and KTOO seemed like a really great organization to work for that had a lot of community focus. So that's how I ended up here.
Well, as someone who works here, I have to agree. Well, welcome. I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad that you selected us out of all the other opportunities that you might have had. And we look forward to seeing your work in the local news this fall. In international news right now are women's protests in Iran. And one of the reasons you wanted to come on today is that you have a personal connection to the country and to some of the people there. So would you please tell me more about that?
Sure. I thought it would be important to talk about my experiences in Iran because I know a lot of Americans and Westerners in general have never been to Iran or don't really know much about the country because it is rather closed off in the world. And so 4-5 years ago, actually, I visited Iran with my mom and we road tripped through Iran. So we rented a car in Tehran and we drove for about 2 weeks to a lot of different cities from basically north to almost the central south side of Iran. And it was a very memorable experience for me. And I think I learned a lot, especially about gender and women's issues while I was there. So I wanted to come on here and share a bit about that since we're seeing so many protests erupt right now over women's issues. And I thought I could add my perspective.
That's great. Well, I have so many questions. First of all, whose idea was it? Was it yours or your mom's to go to Iran and to rent a car and drive around?
It was my idea. Honestly, it was a bit of a random idea. I wanted to travel the world for a few months because I had previously volunteered for the Clinton campaign. I was still in high school at the time. And when President Trump was elected, I kind of wanted to go out and see more of the world and understand how different places have different political and social norms and just kind of expand my worldview. So my mom and I started in Cairo and we saw a bit of Egypt. And then I basically just looked at a map and was looking at what other countries in the Middle East that were kind of close by that we could visit. And I thought of visiting Iran because I saw some interesting blogs from travelers who had been there who had really interesting experiences. So that's how we ended up in Iran.
You had mentioned earlier that Iran is closed off to most U.S. citizens. How were you able to get access? Was it easier to go there from Egypt?
Yeah, I think it's easier to go from Egypt. And at the time, I was a Chinese citizen at the time. So for China, it's like visa on arrival. Americans can actually visit Iran. I met some Americans there while I was visiting, but they have to go with a tour group. But since my mom and I were Chinese, we were able to just visit on our own and rent a car at the only car rental company in the country, which I think was Europe Car.
And so two women renting a car, two tourists, basically, female tourists renting a car, driving around Iran. Is that something that's pretty common, or did you feel like you stood out?
That was actually so funny to me because the entire time we stood out, but not in a bad way. It was more just that people were very curious about what we were doing and why we were there. Not in an interrogative way, but just more just out of curiosity. You know, a lot of people would approach us and ask us for pictures because I think it's rare to see a mother-daughter Chinese-American duo in Iran. Yeah, so it was definitely a bit out of the norm, but we never felt unsafe. It's actually a very safe country for tourists to visit. I guess I'm sure there's probably been issues with tourists in the past, but I mean safety from the perspective of the local people will likely not harm you. Like, I think there's been very few incidents of tourists getting harmed by anyone from Iran outside of the government.
And you know, we know that Iran, basically based on these protests, has a sort of reputation for oppressing women. And here you were, two independent women moving freely across the country. Did you get any pushback? What were some of the customs or norms you had to adapt in order to be able to do that? And were you really moving as freely as it sounds?
Yeah, we were definitely moving totally freely. We had to abide by the head covering rule. But all of the rules there, even the locals told us, they don't really apply to foreigners in the same way, and they don't expect foreigners to adhere to them as strictly as locals do. So, for example, my mom had such a hard time wearing a headscarf because she was just never used to it. It, like, always fell off. So she just wore, like, a hood, like a jacket hood most of the time, and people didn't care. And they even told her, yeah, like, if you're not comfortable with the wearing a scarf, you can just wear like any kind of head covering, like even a cap would work. And this was our experience at the time. And so for us, we were kind of in that place of privilege that we were tourists visiting from a foreign country, and we were just not subjected to a lot of the same restrictions that local women are. Yeah.
Did you speak any of the local languages?
I didn't, but most people in the cities speak English, actually, like as a second language. They, like, most of the people we met could speak English, at least in the big cities.
And how much time did you spend on your trip through Iran?
I think it was about 2 weeks, but we moved really fast. So we started in Tehran for a couple of days, and then we went to this tiny village called Abyaneh. It was like a couple thousand-year-old ancient village, and we kind of walked through it and got these like giant flatbreads that came out of a stone oven. And then we went to Isfahan, which is really a cultural center for Iran. It's really, really gorgeous. And then we went to Yazd, which is a desert village sort of area. We almost got our car stuck there because the roads there have these walls, because they're basically, the way the streets there were built, it's super narrow, and on both sides there's walls, because on the other side of the walls are people's houses. And these walls were built probably before cars, I don't know, but basically you only had about half an inch of space on each side of the car to move.
That's tight.
And we could see cars on the other side, so obviously you can get through. But my mom got kind of stuck because we weren't really used to driving like this. And this 8-year-old boy, like, popped out of nowhere, out of his house, apparently, because this, you know, the side of the wall is a house. and he helped direct us to get us out of this really tight spot.
Wow.
So that was kind of funny. And then we went to, and then we went from Yazd to Shiraz, which is another cultural capital with a really long history of poetry and literature and arts. So I think we got to see a lot of Iran, basically, and I got to really appreciate the history and culture behind one of the oldest civilizations in the world.
Yeah. It sounds like you really had a lot of positive experiences there. I'm very impressed with the 8-year-old who knew enough about cars and driving to get you out of such a tight spot. I figure they probably have to kind of navigate that a lot, I
imagine.
Yeah,
I'm assuming that a lot of people get stuck in front of his house. Like, that's what I kind of assumed, because he jumped out and knew what to do.
Lucky for you guys. Who did most of the driving? You,
my mom did, because I was still 17 at the time, so I didn't even have my driver's license. And it was definitely a challenging place to drive, because people are very aggressive drivers in Tehran. But my mom drove in China a lot because we're from China, so at least she had some practice. But she said it was harder driving there than in China, so it was definitely testing her skills as well.
Wow. what were some of the other highlights or positive experiences that you had while you were there?
I think my biggest takeaway from my time in Iran was definitely the people I got to meet there. I'm still quite close with and in contact with the friends I made there. While I was in Tehran, I met this girl at lunch very randomly because there was nowhere else to sit. And she kind of sat down next to me and we started chatting. And then she invited my mom and I to her apartment and we had tea. And then she just hosted us for a night as well. She was like, yeah, why don't you just stay here for a night? And I heard that it's quite common in Iran to be for people to be very welcoming for like guests into their home. And so we stayed, and she took us around town and took us to her favorite spots for food and different cultural places. And then a few years later, she actually visited me in China. So I took her around in China as well. And we still stay in contact. And she was telling me that things aren't looking too hot right now in Iran. And then I also have made a couple other friends in Isfahan who are all closer to my age. So the girl I met in Tehran was closer to her 30s. But I met some students who were in their late teens, you know, like I was, in Isfahan. And I actually ran into this girl and her mom in a parking lot. And then I asked them about lunch recommendations, and they gave us a recommendation. And we ended up at the same place for lunch. And then we ended up combining tables because they were like, oh, why don't we just eat together? And the mom ended up just secretly paying for our bill. And then the girl told me that she and her friends can take us around town. So my mom and I went with her and her two best friends around town in Isfahan and got to learn all about it. And we also got to experience public transportation there, which is really interesting and not something we would have done if we weren't with people who knew the language. And also, like, the buses there are, like, gender segregated. So there's, like, one side of the bus, one half of the bus for men and one half of the bus for women. So that was a very interesting experience.
Yeah. You said your one friend thinks it's not looking too hot right now. What did she mean by that? How are the protests affecting? It was that in reference to the protests?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, how's that affecting her and your other friends?
Yeah, I know that there's a lot of internet outages from what I've heard. So they're
deliberate outages.
Yes, deliberate outages from the government. And I didn't press too much about what was happening, but from what I know, it's been quite rough in Iran. And some of the friends I met in Isfahan, the younger girls, one of them is in Canada right now, and she's been very vocal and supportive of the protests. So I can definitely see that there is a lot of momentum. And even from some of the male friends I met in Iran, I can see that they're, you know, posting things on Instagram in support of the protests. And I think one of the most, I guess, interesting things I remember hearing in Iran was I talked to the friend of the neighbor of the girl I met in Tehran. He was in his 30s, and I asked him kind of just like out of, you know, curiosity, you know, like, do you think you want kids? Just like a random, because we were just chatting, and he said, no, I can't raise kids in this environment. And I think for me, at the age of 17, I had never thought of, like, a place in the world where you feel so much pressure and so much restrictions that you can't safely raise, a child, or if you choose to. So I think that was really eye-opening to me, and I'm really grateful for the friends I got to meet in Iran, and yeah.
Did you ever feel restricted because of your gender when you were there? Were there things you couldn't access that you wanted to?
I don't think so. I like, for us, since we were just visiting, I don't think there were any spots that we wanted to go to that were men only. I think my mom felt more of a restriction because she just really didn't like things on her head. And she had this like weird story about how my grandma didn't like things on her head either. Like, in general, just like hats. And so she said it runs in the family. So I guess she just personally did not like anything on her head. And so she struggled a bit with that, especially driving, because it's hard adjusting, I think, when you grow up not ever wearing any sort of headscarf. So my mom was driving. She would just be like, this is so hard, because it's hard with a peripheral vision. So I think my mom struggled more, and she actually got scolded by a cleaning lady once, because there's a bunch of, like, you know, morality police and, like, people who are out to kind of police women's dress. And I think her, like, hood fell off once, and this lady scolded her. And so my mom definitely felt more restricted because she felt like she was being watched. And to be fair, there are people kind of secretly watching, like, women everywhere all the time, basically, in public at least. So I get where she's coming from. But for me, I think I didn't really feel any restrictions because I was just, you know, eating and going to restaurants and going to just different historical sites that weren't gender segregated.
So you had said to me when we were setting up this interview that there is a global struggle for gender equality, and that the patriarchy is an unfortunate reality facing women no matter where we are. Would you say it is more extreme in Iran based on your experiences, or is it about the same everywhere?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say that my statement saying that it's the same everywhere. I think I'm just trying to say that it kind of emerges in a different form everywhere. So yes, in Iran, I would say it is more extreme just because it is legally embedded in their government and social system that women are worth less than men, and women cannot be as independent as men, and women can't enter certain professions that men can. So in that sense, yes, like Iranian women are fighting against their government right now because of how many restrictions there are, to the point that it's unbearable. But with that being said, I think that as a 17-year-old girl in Iran, it was very eye-opening and important for me to see the very obvious manifestations of violence against women and oppression of women, to kind of connect that to how I and women around the world experience various forms of prejudice and oppression and kind of restriction on movement too. Because while I was in Iran, you know, I got to see women could only sit in the back of the bus, and I heard that apparently some buses is the front too, so it's not always the back, but it was the back of the bus for the bus that I was on. And it kind of made me reflect at the time on how, even though in the US women can sit anywhere on the bus, there's still restrictions in the sense that, like, you know, as a woman, I'm not going to get on a bus at night because I'm scared. You know, I might get hurt because it's more dangerous for me at night. And just the walking danger of being a woman or a girl and having restrictions on when and where you can access things was really important for me to think about, I think, at that age, even though it's not to the same extremes, perhaps, like in the West.
I saw a post one time that was posing the question, what would you do if for one day there were no men in the world? And so many women were like, I would go running at night with headphones because they wouldn't normally do that otherwise. You have to, you know, don't go out at night or have your bearings, you know, watch out for yourself, watch your back. So I can relate to what you're saying there. And now you're in Alaska, a state where a new report shows we have some of the highest rates of violence against women. Do you think you'll get the opportunity to report on any stories along that topic?
Yeah, I definitely hope so. I've been kind of sitting on this one story for a long time, but I've always wanted to do a story on how TikTok has been helping some women and girls get out of toxic relationships and recognize toxic relationships, because I had a friend who told me that TikTok helped them get out of their toxic relationship. And as I was looking through, like, these TikTok posts, I definitely kind of saw these comments that were like, oh, you know, until you said this, I never realized that this was toxic. So I think it just points to how, like, exposure and education can really help change things for violence against women. And I think for me, like, going to Iran, having that exposure and that education on how gender issues kind of appear around the world was, like, really important for me in even my, like, career now, and making sure that I don't feel, like, less than I am because I'm a woman. And just knowing that all of these things in society, they might be set up this way, but that doesn't mean it's true. So, for example, I think one of the things that I found really interesting about Iran is that STEM is mostly women in Iran. So science, technology, engineering, math is mostly women. Most of the women I met there were all PhDs or computer science engineers or, like, just all these kinds of STEM fields. And as a girl who was interested in STEM, it was so important for me to understand that there's countries in the world where women make up most of STEM. And for Iran, part of that is because women are shut out of fields that aren't STEM, you know, like politics, like music, like dance. So they end up much more in STEM. But just knowing that, and knowing that all of these so-called gender norms or restrictions or prejudices are just, you know, they're just made up. They're not very applicable to people. It's just what other people see and not what you need to internalize.
You're very wise for your age, Chin Chin. Thank you so much for being here today and sharing these stories of Iran. Fascinating stuff. I really enjoyed listening to them. And we're very glad you're here. So thanks again for coming to work with us at KTOO. And I know you have a world of opportunities to choose from. So we're lucky you selected us. And we look forward to seeing your reporting throughout this fall.
Yes, thank you so much for having me again.
Of course. I'm glad we got a chance to chat and that folks got a chance to meet you sort of over the air. Up next, Juno Audubon Society talks hummingbirds, swallows, and terns when we come back.
Sounds wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
On a warm Sunday afternoon in June 2022, a woman spots a small, dark creature crawling across the lawn of her apartment in Douglas, Alaska. It's a bat out in the daytime, which is pretty weird. Sometimes a healthy bat may be disturbed from its daytime roost, or it may become disoriented and will be seen in the daytime, but it'll fly off and find cover. This one just laid there, so she scooped it up into a small cardboard box without touching it and called Fish and Game. A biologist collected the sick bat and sent it to Fairbanks. There, testing by wildlife veterinarian Kimberly Beckman revealed the bat was carrying rabies. This is the first time a bat in the Juneau area has tested positive for rabies. Fish and Game's Wildlife Health and Disease Surveillance Program tests about a half a dozen bats a year for rabies. In more than 50 years of testing in Alaska, about 200 bats have been examined, and in all that time, only 6 have tested positive for rabies. All 6 rabid bats were found in southeast Alaska, either dead or exhibiting abnormal behavior. Most rabies in Alaska occurs among Arctic and red foxes in northern and western coastal areas. Dogs and other mammals are sometimes infected, and it's important that people keep their pets vaccinated. In this case, there was no report of any other animals or people being affected. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
From bats to birds, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Here with me is Brenda Wright from the Juno Audubon Society. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, Shelley.
And Amalia Timoni, who is a UAS student and the featured presenter for tomorrow's lecture. Hi, Amalia.
Hi, Shelley. Great to be here.
Yeah, this month kicks off the annual lecture series that will continue through the spring. As I mentioned, Amalia is your presenter for tomorrow night's talk. So, Amalia, would you please introduce yourself and tell us what got you interested in birds?
Yeah, my name is Amalia Timoni. I am in my last semester at UAS, and last summer, or during the summer, I spent the beginning of it as an intern with the Juno Audubon Society. I just kind of saw a flyer and went for it, and they took me in under their wings, one would say.
Good one.
She flew pretty high, too.
Yes, thank you. And I've always, you know, more worked with marine animals, and so this was just a refreshing foray into working with other organisms. Yeah.
The focus of your interest is rufous hummingbirds, tree swallows, and Arctic terns. At least that's what you'll be talking about tomorrow. So what of interest will you be covering about those birds?
Yeah, so this will be, like I said, I was an intern helping with these projects. Brenda is kind of the leader for the tree swallow project. Gwen Blaus is the leader for the terns and the hummingbirds. So I'm kind of just giving an overview of what we looked at this summer in both of them, kind of overarching trends, and talking about why they're important for us to study and how volunteers and other citizens can get involved.
Well, we have some calls of two of these three birds to listen to. So up first is the Arctic tern. I'll play that now, but you can maybe tell me a little bit about what, where we might find these birds and where we can listen for them. Here we go. They almost sound like squirrels.
Yeah.
Very chattery. So that's the kind of call you might be listening for if you see a bird that you think is an Arctic tern. Where would we find those around town?
Yeah, so that sounds like the classic call of some terns, probably out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center doing their thing. They don't sound too agitated, so this is probably just them talking with one another, chiding one another, maybe doing some courtship rituals. And you can see those out at the visitor center from, I think we had sightings late April into,
late July.
Mm-hmm. Late July.
So they're down here in the summertime.
They're down here in the summertime.
Well, yep. they actually come up from Patagonia, our mm-hmm. particular ones. It's nice that we can some birds are banded, and so we know for sure that a few of ours come from that far away.
Oh, that's really cool.
And they actually, they travel from Antarctica
mm-hmm.
up wow. here doing their yearly migration, and then after they're done here, they get into migratory groups, and they head back over. Down, up, down.
Down from here.
Yes.
And that's probably where they are now.
Yeah.
And then today I learned hummingbirds make a noise. I did not know they make any kind of call at all, but here is the Rufus hummingbird. That's that. Mm-hmm. That's them, right? It's like that chattering sound.
Yeah, they may be small, but they are very fierce.
Yeah, it's that chirruping sound, and then you can hear the buzzing of that's their wings.
Yeah.
And you can actually sometimes tell between the males and the females because of the frequency of that beat.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I bet you have to have a pretty tuned-in ear for that. That's very cool. It's just a taste of the talk, which is tomorrow night and also happens to be the Juno Audubon Society's annual meeting and elections. Brenda, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we have an annual election for our officers, president, vice president, treasurer, and secretary. And if anybody's interested, we'll certainly take a nomination from the floor. But we have to have an election every year for those particular officers. It takes a really long time, several minutes.
Short and sweet. All right. So that's, and you can go to the JunoAudubonSociety.org to find out more. And tomorrow night's talk, meeting and elections. Hopefully you don't need a recount or scandals.
No. Do come at 7 p.m. though.
Starts at 7 p.m. So that's tomorrow night, Thursday, October 14th, UAS Egan Library. I hope our listeners will consider attending Amalia's presentation and also supporting the Audubon Society because we do love our birds here and Tlingit Ani. So thank you both so much for being here today.
Thanks, Shelley.
Great, thank you.
See you next time. Thanks for tuning in today to Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow on the show, Culture Rich Conversations is back for another episode. Season 3 is kicked off as of last week. Tomorrow's topic is living black in a white community. Juno Afternoon broadcasts live Wednesday through Friday at 3 o'clock on 104.3 KTOO Juno and 91.7 KAUK Juno Auk Bay. Also online at ktoo.org. Support for Juno Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Tlingit and Haida Social Enterprises. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is produced by the KTO Arts and Culture team with help from Boston Christopher and Aaron Tripp. To listen to individual interviews, see links to anything we discussed, or to be on the show yourself, check out our website at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. And until tomorrow, have a great Juno evening.